The number one asset to any company is you yourself.
Music has led me all over the world.
I don't know how to do fun things without turning it into a business.
I'm Richard Gearhart.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. You just heard some snippets from our show. We had amazing people on. Listen for the rest of it.
Want to protect your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now, get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I work at Gearhart Law doing the marketing, and I have my own startups.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, everyone, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with startups, small businesses, and discuss the intellectual property that helps them flourish.
We have a great guest, Ken Paskins. I've known Ken for a while now, and I do want to say that he is an amazing guy. He's a business transformation expert and co-founder of The Shift Spot. So we're really going to be looking forward to working with him and finding out what he's all about.
And then we have your typical entrepreneur. We have a musician who's also an author. He has a book. He has a lot under his belt. So Cliff Beach will be here to talk about his career and his entrepreneurial experience. And then we have Danielle Woolley, who is my co-host on the Jersey podcast. And she's going to talk about all the tech stuff and everything she did to get this podcast going and how she keeps it going.
But before we get to our guests, we have IP in the news.
Can you trademark the shape of lettuce?
Well, why wouldn't you be able to trademark the shape of lettuce?
We're going to find out. I don't know. It's at the USPTO right now.
Right. And the company called Little Leaf Farms has a product called Baby Crispy Green Leaf Lettuce. And what they're trying to do is trademark the shape of the curl of the lettuce. And if you look at a picture of the lettuce, they're all little tiny pieces with curves on them. So it is very distinctive. And as far as we know, this is the first time that anybody has filed a trademark application on a vegetable. So yeah. I guess we'll find out if you can trademark the shape of a piece of lettuce.
Yes. And I have to say that we found this article on Fast Company's website by Elisaveta M. Brandon. So I just want to give her credit. It's a very good article. And people have recognized the lettuce when they're eating dinner at other people's houses.
Right. And that makes it distinctive. And so one of the factors is whether or not the mark is distinctive or the goods are distinctive. These are important considerations, and it'll ultimately be up to an examiner at the trademark office who reviews the application. And then they'll comment on whether or not they think Little Leaf Farms is entitled to a trademark, and we'll see what happens.
Right. Can you trademark a shape? Well, Apple trademarks the layout of their stores, so.
Why not a piece of lettuce? Assuming you would even want to trademark a piece of lettuce. But time now for Richard's Roundtable, and we'd love to hear from our guests. So, Ken, good to see you. What's your opinion on this?
I'm going to say no. I've got some experience in trademark and registration and things of that nature. But the only reason I'm thinking no is, I guess what I don't know is, do they genetically engineer it themselves? Otherwise, I'm going to say that God did it, right? And who prevents them from controlling the makeup of that plant? I don't know. That's kind of open to me.
You raise a really good point, and the article states that the plant actually comes from seeds that are found in nature. So you're right. It is a natural creation, although they do have some processing that apparently influences the shape of the lettuce leaves. That could be a factor as well. But you're right. If something is just found in nature, then why should somebody be able to get a trademark on it?
Otherwise, I'm going to do all the plants in my backyard next week.
Well, if you need a trademark attorney, you have my number.
I know where to find one.
Go to learnmoreabouttrademarks.com.
That's right.
Set up a free consultation with Richard.
Absolutely. So that's not a joke. If you are interested in gathering a strategy for trademark protection, you can contact Gearhart Law at learnmoreabouttrademarks.com, and you can download some free content there on trademarks, or you can set up a consultation with me. So learnmoreabouttrademarks.com. Cliff, what are your thoughts about this?
I think it's quite interesting coming from the entertainment world with lots of copyrights with songs and seeing people sued over that. I think if you're able to do it, I say go for it. I think they made rectangular watermelons a few years ago. They should have tried to copyright that and trademark that too. And that was a missed opportunity. I think ultimately they may not win, but they'll definitely get some press as they're already getting written up by Fast Company. Sometimes that's the goal. You know, you see people go on the Shark Tank. They know they're going to get shot down by the sharks, but being out in that blood infested waters gets you in front of people. So in the end, I say, try it all. see what sticks. You probably won't win, but at least people are talking about you.
But you're right, because they have a couple of quotes in here from people that have used the lettuce. The curl is where all the magic happens.
You think that's a made for quote, or did somebody say that? I don't know.
Curliest salad I've ever had. So yeah, I think the publicity is not hurting at all.
That's a really great point. And you make a great point, Cliff, because this helps the brand get known. You generate a little innocent controversy around the legal action, and who knows, hopefully it'll help sell the brand. And if their customers get wind of this, this will be something that people talk about when they're having their Little Leaf Farms salad. So definitely a pretty good idea. Danielle, what are your thoughts here?
So I know it's specifically mentioning the shape of the lettuce and all the frilliness, but my thought is if there's a special process that went behind it, or if it's creating an elevated eating experience, like those are the things that I think can be protected. And I'm a big fan of ask, and the answer could be no, but at least you asked.
Yeah. And try it and ask for permission later. But they do say that there is a slogan here, clean from the start, which apparently is related to their process. And they have trademarked that too. So I think they followed your advice.
I'll add leaf expert to my list of things. Thank you.
That's great. So I guess the moral of the story is that if you have a unique approach to something that you want to protect, you should contact an intellectual property lawyer. I mean, I think whoever came up with this, whether it was the lawyer or whether it was Little Leaf Farms, I think they were trying to be a little bit creative, and they sort of mixed the marketing along with the legal. So the moral of the story is this can only help your business. And if you want to learn more about trademarks, go to learnmoreabouttrademarks.com and you can download our free content there. Now it's time for our featured guest, Ken Paskins. Ken is a business transformational coach, and that means that he helps newer businesses succeed. He's a coach and he's an entrepreneur, and he's co-founder of The Shift Spot, which is a website full of resources that are useful for an entrepreneur. So we recommend that you go there and you check out the content. But welcome to the show, Ken. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to with The Shift Spot.
Yeah, we've been around for nearly 2 years now, but The Shift Spot is a coaching and peer advisory community for business owners that want to make radical shifts in their business and their lives. And we help them achieve their vision by reducing risk, achieving scale, and eventually exiting the company. So we work with companies 100 employees or less, generally CEOs or business owners with 10 years or less of experience. And we focus on six core areas: leadership and management, systems and process, sales and marketing, finance. And we also add a balance equation, right? Because the number one asset to any company is you yourself. So we add that as an element as well.
Why is coaching important for an entrepreneurial venture for the CEO, especially in the startup phase?
During the startup phase, if you look at business owners, so first of all, I said small businesses, but small businesses out there, 98% of companies across the United States are 100 employees or below, right? 89% are 20 or below. A lot of people hear small business and think, oh, that's not for me. Well, guess what? It's a majority of the population or the companies out there. But 50% of entrepreneurs actually learn all their business acumen by doing the job in their company. My father was one of those. My grandfather and my great-grandfather were one of those, which is why I went the corporate track to start. So that means if you think about it, it's daunting, right? I've got to teach myself everything about leadership and how complex that is. I got to teach myself how to read a P&L and all the different financial statements. I got to teach myself about systems and processes and all that stuff that makes a business succeed. It's important. And if you look at just failure rates, 18% of all companies fail the first year and 50% after year five, right? So we think it's important to surround yourself with other like-minded individuals and experts to achieve your vision and get the results you deserve.
Well, that's true. It also helps, I think, being an entrepreneur, they've always said, is lonely. That's why there were all those co-working spaces.
Yeah.
And you don't have anybody to give you the atom points, right?
It's lonely at the top, as we say. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a CEO, you really have to take your satisfaction from serving the customers and seeing your business succeed. Sometimes people don't really appreciate that. I think one of the advantages of joining a group or an organization like yours is that you do have other CEOs to interact with.
Yeah. So the CEO interaction specifically, they go through an entire onboarding program. It starts with a gap analysis, and it's a very intensive, eye-opening experience that evaluates and looks at your company from finance to IT to everything. and shows area of opportunities to improvement. But then we've got 144 different events open in our community through the year, right? Some of those events are an issues resolution group, if you will, where the CEOs, if you can imagine, drop into a virtual community, if you will, and it's professionally facilitated, and they'll bring some of their toughest problems to the table. And we'll use a Six Sigma approach for those that haven't heard of what that is. It's the five whys to get to the root cause. And then we'll come up with what the best solution is for them, and then they can go execute against. But then throughout the, not just that experience, but throughout the community, they have the right to, or the ability to interact, network, pick each other's brains, et cetera, to get to where they need to go.
That sounds like a really powerful organization. I'm part of a peer advisory board right now. I'm just me. So I wouldn't qualify for your group because you don't do solos, right?
That's correct.
But we do have some questions here in our notes that we can ask you. And you know, we've talked before, but you know, this is my favorite question.
Yeah.
Do you have any crazy business stories that would shock us?
Yeah, I do. I have two. And it doesn't happen all the time. But prior to the ShiftSpot, I operated as a fractional drop-in CEO, COO. After working in corporate America, I managed P&Ls up to $500 million, very large teams of 450 plus, and I decided that I'd want to travel 150,000 miles a year. So for nearly a decade, I've been doing that, dropping in as a CEO, COO. And the best way to explain it is I'm a fixer. When companies are struggling, a lot of these entrepreneurs that learn on the job, they're an accidental entrepreneur per se, and they suddenly have a company that's $2, $3, $4, $5 million, and they're turning over staff, and they feel like they're always grinding, always working in the business and just not getting ahead, and they don't know why. I'm one of the guys that they'll call. What's broken? How do I get to the next level? What's missing? So I spent a lot of time doing that, which is what helped me actually create the idea of the ShiftSpot, right? Because I wanted to bring that expertise to larger population. And then to your question, which I already forget.
Which is the most outrageous story.
Oh, yes, yes.
Before we go there, can I ask you, I know that for a lot of businesses, financial reports are really tough.
Right.
What do you think is the biggest thing you encounter when companies are struggling?
The first problem is not utilizing their financial systems correctly. You know, having the books tight and clean, and then understanding the data and how to interpret the data and utilizing the data. So running a company just like flying a plane, like driving a car, like anything, is using the speedometers, odometers, and all the different things to help you understand not just where I've been, but where I'm going as well. But just understanding that. And if you need help, there's plenty of help out there. There's great books, there's great videos, there's great everything. Or just, you know, find a fractional CFO or somebody else to spend some time and put those KPIs and metrics in place so you understand the financials and how to guide the business.
Running your business without financials is like flying an airplane without instruments. Right.
Yeah, and a lot of people do. I mean, it might be surprising, but a lot of people do. It's like, all right, I'll write the check. I still have money in the account and go. You know, I'll ask people, are you making money? Are you profitable? I think so. I took money out last month. Right. So you want to get beyond that and operate with data and science.
And to be successful in your business, you have to take some of the extra money that you generate from the business and reinvest it. Right.
Right.
And so you can't really know how much to reinvest.
Right.
Unless you know what your margins are, what your profit is.
Yeah.
So if you take it all out, then the business may not grow.
I do the marketing for Gearhart Law.
Right.
And I'm constantly asking, okay, who are the most profitable clients? You want to spend your money for marketing on where you're going to make the most profit in your business, right?
Yeah. And specifically in marketing, you want to market where they're actually getting their information and getting their data. And you want to go after the right persona. And you know, as well as I do, all sorts of metrics and return that you want to evaluate from a marketing perspective.
Absolutely. So now we want to get to the stories.
The two scariest, or one was scary and one was just weird. And wow, you don't want this to happen if any poor individual. But one family organization I was working for, it was a meeting with myself, the CFO, and the wife who served as head of sales, CRO, and the husband who was a CEO. And we start the meeting, and she decides that was the best time to serve him divorce papers. You know, our jaws dropped, didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. So, you know, just be cautious. Any envelopes going back and forth between you two, right? I'll get nervous. But that was more bizarre. The other one, which was the scariest, And it's taught me a lot in life. And honestly, it reminded my father, because my father is one of those entrepreneurs that trusted everyone. And he was taken advantage of multiple times. And he fortunately ended up well. As I say, he's 82 and he's finally out of the nest and he's finally grown up. But there was this client that called me, and they were out of Puerto Rico. And he called me and said, "Hey, my COO and I, we're about a $10 million company. And I think that we've outgrown each other. We have a great relationship. We've agreed that when we outgrow each other, we'll go this separate direction. She's agreed to bring a guy like you in to kind of just look at things, evaluate things, maybe coach her up or just tell us what's missing." I get in there, and within 2 weeks, I'm telling the guys, "You got to fire her." And he thought it was crazy. And this guy is, he was in his early 30s and he did online supplements. So he had this whole business and it was complex and, you know, and manufacturing and all of that stuff, right? And, you know, he'd asked me why. And I said, "Look, she's cancerous. And here's some data points on why I believe she's cancerous. She's working against you. She's turning employees against you. She's doing this stuff." He's like, "Man, she's critical to the company. I cannot do that." It's like, "All right, fine. This is my advice, but it's your call, right? So what do you want to do?" "Well, let's keep her for 3 months and unwind her and give her a severance and work with her and all that." "Fine, let's do that." So we go through that process, and in the process, I'm getting deeper and deeper with finance and others and talking to the manufacturers and everything. Long story short, find out that she embezzled over $250,000. She has iPads for her family, flights for her family, something I never realized my entire life. But evidently, there's a phone line that you use to call prisoners. And she had that phone line on the corporate, I don't know, it's 1-800-CALL-PRISON. I don't know what it was. But there's a special, it could be so they record it, I'm guessing, but I remember seeing that. Anyways, we researched her. She had 5 different aliases. She wasn't even operating in the company with her real name. So we went to a Puerto Rican attorney, and he's like, "Look, you know, she's in Austin, Texas. She's talked to somebody stateside." We did that. And the attorney is like, "You can go after her. It might cost you guys $500,000. You may or may not win. She may countersue. What do you want to do?" And he was in a tough spot. And he was in a tough spot because of what she had done with some of the manufacturers were then threatened to sue him as well. So I had to help the poor guy unwind his business, sell off IP and everything, and go do something else. And it was scary. It was really scary and sad.
So it points to the importance of doing due diligence on the people that you hire, you know, checking references and background checks and all the things you can do to make sure you have the right people on board.
Yeah.
I do want to ask a question though, Ken, and that is, when you're in a situation like that and you really have a key person who maybe isn't as awful as the person.
That was the worst one I've ever seen, by the way.
But they are still key, and there are issues, and you're not sure if they're really healthy for the business.
What I tell owners all the time is never leave yourself in the situation where you're hostage. And you're hostage if you have that key individual. There's clearly key individuals, and we have key man insurance to protect companies if somebody should pass or whatever. But running a company and operating a business is kind of like a chessboard, and you've got to understand that. And we actually have one of our users right now in our community that's looking to get rid of their controller, right? And their controller, we fortunately have a fractional CFO that pops in every quarter. So we've mapped out this plan. Well, guess what? The board now wants a fractional CFO to interact every 2 weeks and go uncover this data. And it's manipulative, but we're planning the exit, right? Now, he obviously, this individual hasn't harassed anything or done anything or stolen money or whatever. So we don't have to be as critical, but they need to be exited. So we mapped out a strategic plan. You can't be hostage, and you have to plan for that and prepare for that.
And if you're going to be a CEO, you have to have the stomach for that.
Yeah. Right?
Because sometimes moving people out who you've had a relationship with and who you may even like personally is not necessarily an easy thing. And when you do that, you're taking a risk because on the one hand, you know, you have the status quo, and at least to some extent, it's probably working, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then you also appreciate that the company can be better if you make that change.
And keep this in mind too. Some people they don't like to fire, right? I don't like to fire. I unfortunately have probably fired and hired thousands of people. So I now just look at it, it's part of the process. But if you're a CEO and you're struggling with, "I just don't want to do this. They have family and all this." Think of it this way. You need to fire them because something's not working in the company. which means the company isn't as healthy as should be. If the company is healthier and where it should be, that's better for your customers, but also it's better for your employees because that person's probably impacting your other employees. So do you want to take care of the greater good, all of your employees, or focus on this one individual? And if you can look at it that way, the greater good, my clients, all my employees versus one individual, it does make it easier.
So we have questions here that Ken is always ready to answer.
Yep.
What are the key differences between leadership and management? So you hear leadership and you hear management. What's the difference?
Yeah. So leadership at a high level is setting the vision and the direction for either your group and or your company, right? And setting up that communications and proper expectations. Management is more of the day-to-day tactical, such as giving them the systems and the processes, holding them accountable to executing the task at hand. But they are different. Actually, we've got an entire presentation that we actually do in our community on this. But think of the leader as the general on the front lines, right? And the manager is the lieutenant actually in the battlefield, supplying, the ammo and doing all the hard work, if you will.
So we have to take a break. Ken Paskins, this is a great discussion. Make sure you stay tuned and we'll be back with more Passage to Profit right after this. I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law. We specialize in patents, trademarks, and copyrights. You can find out more at learnmoreabouttrademarks.com. We love working with entrepreneurs and helping their businesses grow. And here is our client, Ricky, to tell it like it is.
Hi, I'm Ricky Frango, founder and CEO of Prime 6. We manufacture high-performing, clean, and sustainable fuels like charcoal and logs. We've been working with Gearhart Law since the beginning, really, and they've helped us figure out the trademarks, the patents, everything that has to do with product development and how to protect our inventions. And we're extremely grateful for the wonderful team that has been supporting our business since day one.
Thank you, Ricky. To learn more about trademarks, go to learnmoreabouttrademarks.com and download our free Entrepreneur's Guide to Trademarks, or book a free consultation with me to discuss your patent and trademark needs. That's learnmoreabouttrademarks.com for your free booklet about trademarks and a free consultation.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
We have with us Ken Paskins.
We just had an incredible first half of his interview. Now we're going to jump right into the second half. Ken is a business guru. He has a book and he has a group. The Shift Spot is his book. But now I want to ask him, we were talking about KPIs, key performance indicators. How can I create KPIs for a company that matter? Because anything could be a KPI, like how many times I ordered donuts this week.
That might be a good KPI, by the way. We spend a lot on donuts.
Yeah. So a lot of people will just pull stuff out of the air, right? I'm a marketer, so I need to track people that come to my website. Might be a good KPI, but make sure that it's actually relevant. And what I try to tell CEOs specifically is look at it, and I'll use a healthcare term, cradle to grave, right? It is in the healthcare industry, and that's pretty self-explanatory. But what starts at the very beginning of my company? So let's say I'm a landscaper, and the very beginning is I invest $1,000 in AdWords, and AdWords turns into 5 marketing qualified leads that then turn into 3 sales leads that then go through my sales funnel, that then I close 10% of those, right? And I know what my ASP is, average sales price, and I'm just making stuff up, so forgive me. Let's say that my average sales price is $25,000 per deal, right? That then goes to my operations team, or probably goes to finance first. Finance is going to invoice, and then it goes over to operations. Then operations actually creates a project, dispatches the team and everything, does the work, and then back over to finance, and finance then collects the cash. And then the cash gets in the bank account. So that entire process from marketing, and not always marketing, right? Believe it or not, to in sales, to operations, to finance, how and what does it touch? And what I like to do is actually get a whiteboard and just whiteboard every little thing across the entire organization. And then if you can imagine, some of those things can be very important KPIs per department. So I've got some marketing KPIs. Got sales, I've got ops, I've got finance, et cetera. And I can pull those out. From a high level perspective, focus on, as a company and a CEO, focus on pulling out 9 to 15 of those, of the most important ones across that continuum. And focus on roughly 70% of those being leading indicators versus lagging. And that's a little tricky because if you think about it, closing a deal, a lot of people look at that as that could be a lagging indicator. Well, closing a deal, if I know turns into cash in the bank 67 days later, that could be a leading indicator for cash in the bank or cash flow, right? So determine what are the most important and then focus on those. The strategy is look at everything and then determine what's most important per group and then what's important to me. Focus on leading because you want to put yourself in the direction where you're looking ahead as a company. I can see 90 days to 180 days out where I'm going to be versus looking at the end. Oh, I'm glad we closed that deal. And if you can put yourself on that trajectory, then you know where you're going and you can predict problems and you can preempt problems.
And that's really what the purpose of the KPIs are. The goal is to try to sort of anticipate what's going to be happening in the future. So if there is an issue or an opportunity someplace, then you can take advantage of it before it becomes a problem or the opportunity is lost.
That's correct. And like I said, a lot of people will just pull up out of the air, right? And they'll guess, I think I must monitor this, right? And then a really good thing is after you get that scorecard together and you're measuring those, if something's off track, use the 5-Y process, the Six Sigma process. So if I didn't close deals, why did I not close deals? Well, because I didn't work hard last week. Well, why did I not work hard last week? Well, I was distracted. Why was I distracted? So get to the root cause and identify what's causing that KPI to fail. And then what solution could I put in place to make it succeed?
Well, do you think that you need to start from the end? So, okay, right now I need X number of dollars to run this company. So let's work backwards. Is that kind of how you would do it? Or would you start at the marketing part and work forward?
I would do it either. But I prefer, if you're doing it at the end, that's a good way to back into financials and also capacity planning and all those type of things. But actually, if I'm trying to map out my KPIs, and I've never thought of it that way, I always prefer to actually just start at the beginning. So point A, whatever A is, and then question yourself, is this truly A, right? Some people say, well, we send a quote, that's where we start. Well, is it really where you start or is there something more than that? And force yourself to get to point A and go all the way backwards. To your point though, that's really how I'm looking to build my financials and capacity plan and for my ops team or customer service folks or so forth. If I want to hit $10 million in revenue, what sort of profit is that? How many people do I need per department? When do I need to hire them? And then I'm kind of working backwards from a headcount perspective. How long does it take to recruit? How long does it take to onboard? So I think mathematically, there are two different approaches for two different problems, the way I see it.
KPIs are a form of accountability, but how do you drive accountability through a team or through an organization?
Really, there's five things that you got to do. You got to set clear expectations, lead by example, make sure that you provide regular feedback to the team, drive a culture of accountability, and do what you say as a CEO or an owner yourself as well. What do I mean by that? I always like to tell owners or leaders, expect 90% of your team of what you're willing to do. Because if you say that we must execute, but you never do what you say you're going to do, then don't be disappointed if your team doesn't do it. But that's it. So, I mean, those are kind of the areas in the buckets. But setting expectations is something I don't think, it's one of the basics that a lot of people don't do. We assume Danielle just knows that she's supposed to show up on time. Well, does she? Right? I mean, her previous company, it was, hey, you just arrive 8 to 9, we don't really care. And if I haven't had that conversation with Danielle and said, here's what I expect and what I need, and if I'm not clear with that, then, you know, I can't hold that against her. And something to keep in mind too, you've got to continually reinforce that. So do that in quarterly dialogues with the employees, document it. We all learn differently as well. Some people are audio, some people are visual, if you will. So I haven't cued in on it today, but somebody says, I hear you. And guess what? They listen. So when I speak to them, they're going to absorb it more. If they say, I see you, then they're visual, right? So put it in writing, let them read it. But those are the areas that you want to focus on to drive accountability. But accountability, I believe, honestly falls on the leader more than the employee. If you set up that framework of clear expectations and everything and give them everything that they need to be successful, I believe ultimately as humans, we want to be accountable, but it's up to the leader and manager to set that and then for the employee to step into it and be accountable. And if they don't, that's when it's on them.
What do you think about vision? Vision for a company? How do you create and implement a vision?
That starts with the owner clearly. Why did you start the business? I like to ask people to jot it down and come up with what their core values are. Think about where they're going to be in 3 years, 2 years, 1 year as well. But where ultimately do they want to go? What's their biggest purpose as well? You could own a law firm and your biggest purpose is to serve humanity, but create that vision. And I think that helping employees understand the vision and understanding the expectations of how to be accountable and how to execute, I think are two of the biggest things that actually are missing from the CEO, the owner, or the leaders of the organization. But you also, with that vision, you've got to constantly articulate what it is to your people. Don't assume. I don't know how many times I've heard people say as well, I don't know why they don't understand our vision. I don't understand why I always have to do this. I don't understand why I have to always sell or whatever. It's on us. So create a quarterly structure of where you're articulating and going over the vision. Get people involved with that. Make it a culture where the employees want to actually own and be a part of that as well. Another thing that I like to do with owners that are especially newer company or they're trying to get the vision out and get it absorbed and get it within the DNA of the employee. Create a weekly thing. I had one client, his name was Casey. So I created this thing called Coffee with Casey. And it wasn't mandatory. It was every Friday for 30, 45 minutes. Employees would dial in. And guess what? Because it wasn't mandatory. And I pitched it this way. I was like, hey, it's your chance to sit down with the CEO, small company still, 15, 20 employees, sit down with the CEO and ask him anything you want and for him to share where he's going. And everybody would attend. They were curious and they would feed back into him on, here's what other customers are saying. Here's what I'm seeing in the market. Have you thought about this? And that would actually help fine tune his vision as well. But vision is important. You got to put a lot of time and focus in it. You got to reiterate with employees. Don't just make it one and done. A lot of people do. Here's our vision. Everybody got it? Okay, get back to work and go deliver my vision. It doesn't work that way. It's a constant, constant process.
Okay, Ken, so I got my vision. A lot of other ducks in a row, but I don't know how to scale. What's keeping me from scaling?
It's all the basics of the shift spot and what we talked about, those core areas. You got to be tight with leadership and management and what that means. And all sorts of things fall in there, such as how do we communicate, communication cadence, providing the right tools, measure monitoring, drive and accountability, all those aspects. You have to have a grasp of systems and processes as well. As newer companies start out, we throw bodies at it. Oh, well, Susie's overwhelmed. Let's get another person. Oh, they're overwhelmed. Let's get another person. I see Danielle shaking her head. I know her background, right? But we want to just toss bodies at it. You got to understand what systems and processes can alleviate some of that, and which will save you money and also prevent human error, which will probably also deliver a better experience. And as we talked about earlier as well, understand your finances and your numbers, right? Understand that, you know, be just like a professional coach, a professional athlete. They all know the plays ahead of time. Understand that stuff, rock solid, if you will. And just focus on those core areas and discipline and surround yourself with the right people in the company to help grow the company. But it really gets down to business basics. And I like to tell people all the time, I don't care what you think about Tom Brady, even though he might be retired. Every time Tom Brady gets out there to do a game or whatever, he's practicing dropping back and passing the ball. That guy's passed the ball 2 million times, right? He's practicing it, right? And there's no reason why we shouldn't do that as business owners and CEOs. Get the basics down and build off the basics. Once you do that, then you can scale and you can put yourself more in that visionary owner seat.
Great advice, Ken. We have to take a break, but I just want to say this is an amazing discussion. Thank you for all the helpful advice. And where can people find out more about you and the Shift Spot?
Yeah, just go to theshiftspot.com and find a bunch of stuff there. And then for all of your listeners, we wanted to do something special. We've got this gap analysis when I was a fixer, we'll call it, drop-in COO. I use this gap analysis when I first go into companies, and it's a $5,000 value, and we're providing it for you guys. Go to theshiftspot.com/gap and type in passage to profit as the code. And we're going to pull a couple of your listeners out and we're going to go through some areas of opportunity, work on these, and you're going to have a better business and a better life.
Thank you so much. And I hope our listeners will take advantage of that. You may get selected and hopefully you can get something of real value to help your business. So we really encourage you again to go to theshiftspot.com and type in
/gap, theshiftspot.com/gap.
And then passage to profit
is the code.
Is your code.
And I just want to say the shift spot is the SHIFT spot.
That's correct.
Thank you so much, Ken Paskins. Back with more Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart right after this.
Hi, I'm Lisa Askley, the Inventress, founder, CEO, and president of Inventing A to Z. I've been inventing products for over 38 years. Hundreds of products later and dozens of patents. I help people develop products and put them on the market from concept to fruition. I bring them to some of the top shopping networks in the world. QVC, HSN, eVine Live, and retail stores. Have you ever said to yourself, someone should invent that thing? Well, I say, why not make it you? If you want to know how to develop a product from concept to fruition the right way, contact me, Lisa Askeles, the Inventress. Go to inventingatoz.com, inventingatoz.com. Email me, lisa@inventingatoz.com. Treat yourself to a day chock full of networking, education, music, shopping, and fun. Go to my website, inventingatoz.com.
Passage to Profit continues with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
You just heard from Ken Paskins. What a fantastic segment filled with so much useful information that you can apply to your businesses. And if you haven't had a chance to hear the whole interview, we encourage you to go and find us on podcasts. So you can get to us anywhere where you get your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show and download the episode, and you can hear from Ken again, as well as the rest of the episode that's coming up next. So on now to our lovely co-hosts, various entrepreneurial projects. So Elizabeth, why don't you tell us what's been going on?
If you've listened to this, you know, I started a company called Blue Streak Directory. It's a video directory for business services. And I'm right in a crucial part of it right now. As I said earlier, I made some strategic partnerships, one in particular for getting the videos done. You can't believe the software out there. The software wasn't there when I started, but now it's there, which is really cool. So I think that that is one thing that's important for businesses. My business especially is to know everything that's out there that's new that I can use for it, because I'm trying to push the envelope with this. I haven't found anything like it, quite like it, knock on wood, yet. So hopefully nobody else is doing the same exact same thing. But for instance, like I'll probably use AI to help me do some blogs when I get the website done. And that's just a really powerful tool. So I'm working on that. I'm going to a networking event, Small Business Expo in Manhattan this week. So I'm going to get a lot of education there and hopefully make some good contacts. And I don't want to talk too much about what I'm doing with Blue Streak, because it's kind of in a sensitive stage right now. And we're working on the website too. And then, of course, my lovely co-host for Jersey Podcasts podcast is here, and she's going to talk about that in much more detail. But she just had a cat come on her desk. Danielle and I host a podcast together where we interview, well, not really interview, we kind of try to have a conversation with cat lovers. But one of our most popular things that dog people want to be on there too, that's coming up, is dogs versus cats, cats versus dogs. And the last time we did one, I do think Danielle won when she said wet dog smell. Danielle's getting us great guests to talk to, and we're really having a lot of fun with it. But Danielle's doing a lot of the technical work with it too. So I really want to hear now from Cliff and then Danielle about their projects and companies. So we have here with us Cliff Beach. He is a musician with California Soul Music record label. He's also an author. He wrote a book, Side Hustle and Flow, 10 Principles to Live and Lead a More Productive Life in Less Time.
Less time is the real kicker there, isn't it?
Cliff, tell us all about what you're doing.
I am a musician and author based in Los Angeles. I have been a musician for over 20 years. Music has led me all over the world touring. I've released 10 albums in the last 10 years, all of them of which are all streaming platforms. I've also forayed into radio. I have a weekly radio show in Los Angeles called Deeper Grooves. I also have a podcast based on that, Deeper Grooves, where we interview musicians on music, very similar to the Actors Studio with Actors on Actors. We talk about Grammy Award-winning and Grammy-nominated musicians, musicians of all tracks of life, how they were able to start their journey, especially focusing on the business side as well as the art side. And then I've also had 2 seasons under my belt on Discovery Channel, Discovery Plus, now on also Max, of being the house band leader for Josh Gates Tonight. So yeah, I really enjoy now helping people as a life coach and mentor, music artists, but really anyone who wants to side hustle. I really feel that, as you had mentioned about AI, AI is going to replace a certain amount of people. And I think as we do talk about business entrepreneurship, I do remind people that intrapreneurship is also a part of the journey where people can work for someone while still working for themselves. And I think you're at a point now where you almost have to do that. And then with the rise of so many apps from Uber and Airbnb, there's so many opportunities that didn't exist and more things will exist 10 years from now. So people that are trying a lot of things to see what sticks and following Ken's advice to have those KPIs to be able to understand what's working and not working and refine the process, know where you're going, know where you've been, and understanding your customer, I think all of those things happen. And with musicians, what they don't tell you is that whether you think about it or not, you are a business. You are a solopreneur. You are a business of one. And if you want to be able to scale, you want to be able to have passive income, creating things that are out there. And the streaming services world, allowing people to be able to tap into it as they see fit on demand and be able to learn in different styles, as Ken alluded to as well, allows you to just be able to expand your brand and universe.
So, wow.
Let us ask you, though, when we talk about musicians and entrepreneurship, how does that interact? I mean, how do musicians who are trying to build their own careers act as entrepreneurs?
I think all businesses, and especially musicians, they have to. They're selling a service. They are the brand. They are the product. You have to now know social media and how to get your information out there. Gone are the days of waiting for a green light from a record label or an A&R person to be able to tell you that you can go ahead and do that. Now it's a democratized platform and society with the internet where people are able to get stuff on YouTube and Spotify and Apple Music, et cetera. And so I think the hardest part for musicians is that the marriage of art and commerce, they conflict against each other. So the artist mindset, it's like, we would do this no matter what for free because we love it so much and it's something that's in our DNA. But as a business, you can't do it for free. That becomes a charity, a nonprofit, if you will. And so I think they do work together well. I think understanding that when you hear about stories like someone who had their funds embezzled because they weren't watching things, that happens to musicians all the time. You look at someone like a Billy Joel. Well, that happens to people you trust because, again, sometimes you're focusing so much on the art. The commerce part is like an afterthought. In the same way, I tell people all the time, we spend so much as artists on what I call the pregnancy and the birthing stage. But in real life, if you've ever had children, you don't just have a pregnancy and then it's over. 9 months later, you have to now raise this kid for 18 years plus, and they always need you. So you have to be thinking about the future and how you want to go through all these incremental, what they call baby steps to be able to grow your business. But there's really no right or wrong way. I think the main thing is that you have to start asking questions, just like Six Sigma and the Five Whys. You have to be asking self-reflecting questions to be like, am I becoming better? Because as Jim Rohn says, life does not become any easier. We just must become better. That's really the only option. And side hustling is one avenue that allows you to do that, to try a bunch of different things while you're still, you know, gaining income from your full-time job.
So when you're talking about side hustling, are you talking about different potential projects or career paths, or are you talking about this for musicians and entertainers?
You know, it started out for me on the music side, but I think anyone can do it. At the same time, in the book, Side Hustle and Flow, I differentiate that some people can have side hustles that don't make money. Really, when we talk about being more productive in less time, it's about being more effective with our time, right? So people always say, how do I spend my time? But what you want to actually say is, how do I invest my time? Because you can't have a return on spending it. You can only have a return on investing it. And so as you start to do that, the side hustle becomes, there's a theory in Japanese called ikigai. What am I good at? You know, what's my reason for living? What can I give from society, give to society? What can I make money from? Those types of questions allow you down the path to figure out. For instance, I met a person who was like, I love to salsa dance. And I told them, well, if you know what you love to do, you should try to do it as much as you can afford to and as much as humanly possible. Now, eventually, if you want to make money from that, you can teach and do other things. There's ways to diversify. But the first thing is figuring out what you really want to do. Because sometimes you may love to do something and may be great at it, but maybe that's not something that you can make money from. So all of those questions are important. It's not one question. It's all of them. But really, again, when you talk about side hustling, it's allowing yourself to have these opportunities to be able to see what you want to plant, different seeds, and then what they grow. The beauty of planting and having that harvest time is that you don't have a one-to-one relationship. If you plant a lot of seeds, you don't plant one apple seed and get one apple. That would be like a futile and not productive. So you allow to be able to do that. But at the same time, you get whatever you put into it. So if I'm planting apple seeds, I'm going to get and expect apples to come.
Yeah, that's a really great way to describe that. So I'm just wondering if Ken has a comment or a question here.
I'm curious on, honestly, the impacts. You mentioned AI, the impacts of AI in your industry and what you see going on there. We use it, I believe in it, but it's also scary. And I think it can be robbing from artists in the future as well.
Definitely. And they have already seen people with AI try to write songs and emulate singers who have died in the past that they're using to make new creations. AI is able to pull from historical information. Say we look at ChatGPT, it has limitations. Obviously, right. They have humans to come on top of that to be able to do that. It's very formulaic. And there's ways that works, especially when you're writing, very formulaic emails, for example, you could probably get away with that and tweak it a little bit easier than if you're writing a book or a screenplay or a song that needs an artistic license that a computer wouldn't be able to get. But I think it's a tool, and I think you should use it just like money is a tool. People say it's good, it's bad. It really is indifferent. It's how you utilize it that makes it what it becomes, and that's with a human behind
it.
You still have to manage it, though, because we've looked at some AI blogs and you can tell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the visual arts, AI is taking pictures from different artists and then combining them together to create, I don't know if you'd call it artwork, but at least, new designs. But the art does bear the striking resemblance to the art that the AI used to create the pictures, right?
Yeah.
Copyright lawsuit about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so who did the original creative? And that's what AI has to do, though, is go find people's creative work to put together whatever AI is going to give you.
Right. And does that work in the music industry then? Can AI find music and combine it from different composers or different sources?
Yes, it most certainly can. And again, there are some copyright and court cases that are coming up based on that because it pulls, again, from historical data and things that have already existed. It creating 100% totally from scratch, I think, is what makes us have a human experience. At the same time, being that snowflake, having that X factor DNA, the uniqueness of it filtering through you is what makes it unique. Because everything is technically based on the past and what has happened. So music and styles have evolved from previous styles and previous generations. And then we come back and revisit certain things in a new way. So you think of it like you're in a kitchen and you're able to make so many different things because you have all these inputs and there's recipes. And then some people go off script and figure out how to do their own thing. But I think AI can definitely help you if you're stuck to figure out certain ways of doing that. But again, I think the human experience of being able to do something just 100% scratch on your own is something that a computer won't do. I mean, again, a computer and all of that is created by a human to be able to create that code, et cetera. So I don't think we'll ever fully be replaced. We'll just move on to very uniquely human things that only humans can do.
From your lips to God's ears, we're waiting for the tech overlords to take us away. And hopefully your prediction is that's probably not going to happen, at least not in the near future. But going back to the side hustles, are there particular types of side hustles that you think are especially successful, being something that somebody can do outside their normal job, which is kind of the definition of a side hustle?
Yeah, I think there are some that are more advantageous than others. I think when you think about time and how you invest it, you have to realize the value of your own time. And so things that require you to physically be in the presence, you have to charge more for. So when you look at someone that's doing coaching, if you're doing one-on-one coaching with one person versus teaching in mass at a seminar versus having an online course, obviously the online course becomes efficient because you can record one speech today that can be listened to and downloaded on demand in perpetuity. So I think when you're thinking about that, especially as a solopreneur and a side hustler, there is a certain point where you reach a tipping point where you have to decide, how can I, from a passive income and a time management perspective, have something that can live on without me? Because essentially you just own a job if you just are the only person doing everything all the time. So you have to figure out how you can delegate, but then utilizing these tools like AI, like being able to record, to be able to then have something that people can access to. So as a songwriter, having my music where people can stream it at any time, now having one song that has almost 1 million streams, people were able to listen to that while I was asleep. That's the beauty of it. It's like if I had to go and perform that song for everybody on a one-on-one basis, that would be very tiring, exhausting, and be limited to my physical limitations, my geographical limitations. So I think that's the beauty of the world, you know, having that limitless potential, having that growth mindset to believe that that is possible. But then from there, technology has allowed you to now, from a human resources perspective, you can work with people remotely now that you wouldn't have been able to access to. Maybe your COO is someone who's based in Australia and you're based in America, and you have the ways to do that.
We have here with us Cliff Beach. He is a musician with California Soul Music record label. He's also an author. He wrote a book, Side Hustle and Flow. So in the show notes that we have here, it says that you got kicked off American Idol, and then you had a hit song called Confident.
Yeah, well, let me tell you that there are many rounds to get to television. And when they say you're going to Hollywood, that has happened many times over before you actually see it on television. They actually have producers bring you into a room and they explain to you that they pick people who are great for TV. Doesn't necessarily mean you're the greatest musician in the world. They're just great for TV. Would America vote for you? That's what they're always thinking. And so, I made it through multiple rounds getting to the round where I ended up getting cut off on television. And it's tough. It's tough to have public failures where people can call you and say, I saw you get kicked off on TV. So all these family members and friends, you know, people I haven't heard of. I tell people all the time, they're like, oh, I want to find family members. I don't know if they exist. Let me do a 23andMe. I'm like, no. Just tell people you won the lottery, put an ad out. Believe me, family members will find you. And the same way, for some reason, public failure, they will find you. And so, it was tough. It was tough to be kicked off by people that you admire to tell you that you're not good enough or whatever it is. But I learned very quickly to pivot that, one, nobody can really tell you what you can and can't do. You are the captain of your own ship and the master of your own fate. And you can only, you know, write your own epitaph in that way. And at the same time, realizing that it was only one channel to get out there, but not the only channel. And you look at people like Jennifer Hudson, who were kicked off American Idol, but then, you know, won Oscars and Grammys and other stuff. And so no one can really know the whole story. You can be able to create that journey for yourself. But definitely when you talk about resiliency and what Angela Duckworth calls as true grit, I tell people all the time with perseverance, it's after the point that the feeling has left you. And anyone here on this panel, I'm sure, can tell you that the feeling leave pretty quickly. To be able to do it day in and day out for years and years, and to be able to, through all types of adversity, still be that person, you know, that dares to be great and has been bludgeoned by circumstance and in the ring day after day after day. You know, you look at Rocky, it's like, oh my gosh, why aren't they still fighting? Why are they still getting beat up? His eyes look terrible. Like, someone should tell him, throw the towel. But you get to this point where it's like, that's how you build that character and that resiliency and that tough skin and that stomach to be able to do that. And for the entrepreneur, you know, it's a roller coaster. Not everybody will be able to weather those storms. And like I tell people all the time, a ship at harbor is the safest, but it's built to sail. It's built for adversity, but not for the faint of heart, for sure.
Well, I love the way that you express things. And I just want to say that so much of what happens in the public sphere is arbitrary anyway, and it's very subjective. And a lot of times people who are making decisions in that realm are wrong. They're just human like anybody else, and they make mistakes as well. So when you do face that kind of adversity, I think that you have to take that into account. But not taking it personally, I think, would be tough. In fact, you went further than virtually anybody else ever does in these kinds of contests. And yet there are some people out there who would say, well, you didn't make it.
But then he came back and had a hit song called Confident.
That sounds like a perfect anecdote. Cliff, it's been absolutely marvelous having you on the program.
Cliff has been in the music world a long time, and he's done a lot of amazing things. And you can find out more about him at cliffbeachmusic.com. Now on to Danielle Woolley, who, as I said, is my co-host on the Jersey Podcast, but she is not just a super good podcast co-host. She is also a professional services consultant. She's a liaison for a rescue group called Tommy's Cats Rescue. So she really gives back. And of course, she does a lot on the podcast. So Danielle, welcome. Let's talk about the podcast.
Both of you guys, Ken and Cliff, talked about such cool things. I can actually take pieces of what both of you said and apply it to podcasting as well. Usually the first question I get from people is like, you're a business consultant and you work with field service companies, but you have a podcast about cats. Like, they just don't get it. And I actually have this condition called, I don't know how to do fun things without turning it into a business. So that's kind of how we wound up there. And I'm also a big fan of networking and connecting with other people. And I actually had met Elizabeth Gearhart. You know, we were introducing ourselves to one another. I happened to be at a conference, the Association of Women Inventors and Entrepreneurs, led by the amazing Lisa Askelis. And, you know, just introduced myself as what I just told you guys. I said, but, you know, I'm just here to relax and meet people. And I really love cats. And she's like, wait a minute. I was just telling my husband how, you know, I would really love to start a podcast about cats, but I don't know anybody that I can do it with. And seriously, that's exactly how it happened. So you never know who you're going to meet.
When Danielle and I started, we're like, well, yes, let's do make this a business. So Danielle, I know a lot of people have asked me about podcasting and what you have to do. Can you talk about all the tech you put in place for this?
Absolutely. And I want to start by saying there's not a definite right or wrong. Similar in business, you want to kind of analyze where you're at, what your goals are, what kind of time and money investment you want to make. And for us, it was important to me, at least, to not just have what everyone kept saying we should have, because that wasn't really a fit for us. I wanted something that was fun to use, that had a community based around it. So one of the software platforms we chose specifically has a community geared around podcasting and the equipment behind it, the technology as far as, you know, where are you recording? What kind of computer are you using? I'm a Mac girl. So it was a nice excuse for Santa Claus to bring me a new MacBook Pro. Because if I had just listened to like, okay, here's the checklist of all the things you have to use, if they weren't comfortable for me, I wasn't going to have fun doing it.
Absolutely. The equipment does make a difference. If you're confident in the way you sound and you're confident in the way your recordings come out, I think that encourages you. So absolutely, the equipment is important.
Yeah. And even Ken mentioned earlier how some people are visual, some prefer to listen versus seeing. For me, it's very important for things to sound good and look good. And so we decided to do both YouTube and to do the regular podcast and all podcast platforms, as well as a Facebook community group. I've sometimes been questioned, well, why those three areas? Why not be everywhere? Why not be on TikTok? Why not have a newsletter going? Those are all plans to have in the future, but we want to make sure we have the fan base there first. And then I know you guys are all going to agree when I say our systems and processes have to be in place. There's nothing worse than me working with clients all day and telling them it's broken because you didn't follow the system, or it's confusing because you don't have the data behind it. And then for me and Elizabeth to be in the same exact spot. So it's like calling the kettle. Is it calling the kettle black?
Or practice what you preach, or
pick your own medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played with a couple of different formats. So first we would do some banter between us, and we thought, well, let's put the guests first. And we're just kind of trying to figure out what flows the most naturally.
And we're turning it into a business. So it started up as a fun project. So I love editing. I love marketing stuff. I like playing with graphics. I like all of those pieces. And that's why I also chose certain software programs to use. Yeah. Because if it wasn't fun for me to do it, I was not going to do it. And yes, we easily could have hired out for somebody, but then it's not a fun creative project for us anymore.
Yeah. Yes. Just the only question, what is the goal?
So our goal is to monetize it. As I mentioned before, I don't know how to not turn things into businesses. We are starting small though, because again, we want to make sure it's a nice fit, even like the format of it. Just because everyone else is very successful doing interview style doesn't mean that that's the format we want to follow. We want to kind of build that up first. And then we'll be monetizing it. We already have things available as far as supporting the show. And I love doing that because I love following content creators. I'm a big fan of actually listening to podcasts on YouTube. So that's why that's important to me, because then I could follow and see what they're seeing. And then it makes other suggestions and other things that I should see and watch. So we're collecting all that data and actually building community around it as well, especially because people don't know who I am and they just hear I run a podcast. They're like, oh, but then when they start talking to me and they're like, oh, wow, she knows business. She knows really cool, interesting people. Okay, I'm going to pay more attention to her now. I want more people, and I know Elizabeth agrees, to feel comfortable just talking about something that they love all day. And for us, that happens to be cats.
What are your biggest challenges now?
Time.
I think that's an obvious answer. I feel like everyone probably throws that one out, but if we're being honest, it's time. It's not just the amount of time that's allotted for doing things, but to the degree that we want to, right? Because we do, you know, we have full-time lives behind all of this as well. And there's only so much time we can allocate each week. But I would say the second biggest challenge is, funny enough, the marketing, because we both do marketing. So sometimes doing it for yourself can be a challenge. And we've actually had people reach out wanting to promote and wanting to sponsor, but they don't feel aligned for us. So it's kind of like okay, it's interesting that that's the type of company that reached out, but maybe they don't align with our values. They're just seeing our listeners and wanting to get in front of them. So it's really picking and choosing. And I think we're able to be more picky about things and a little bit slower because we both have other endeavors and I have a full-time job as well. It's not like we're like itching and kicking and screaming where we have to be bringing in money right at the moment.
That's great. I kind of like to bring Cliff back into this a little bit because we were just talking about side hustles. And it's interesting what Danielle said is one of the challenges with the side hustle is really investing enough time in it so that it can actually mature into a business, right? So what are your comments about that?
Well, I think they have some great things going for them. Obviously, cat lovers is an audience and there's ways to find them and tools that will do that. And I think it's nice to have a novel idea because I haven't heard of a podcast on this subject matter to that degree. And people are looking into doing that. You know, I've talked to people in the podcast world, like medical doctors who have created podcasts around breast cancer, and someone actually documented their actual journey because normally they figured out that people were always talking about it after you had gotten through it. But no one was really documenting like how I feel in the moment. And people, as Maya Angelou says, like they'll forget what you did and what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel. It's the transference of feeling from the music world and beyond, I think, that does that. Even in the business world, when you're talking to someone about those numbers, when you attach feelings to that, for good or bad, you know, it makes people move the needle a different way than, you know, just looking at something in black and white. But I think, yes, figuring out the time and time management is always the struggle. That really is the commodity that we're trading money for time and vice versa. But I do like what Danielle said in terms of saying, because you are side hustling, because you do have other endeavors, it allows you to be able to grow as quickly and as fast and be able to be selective. And I think that is important because you'll look at a company like Amazon that became this huge juggernaut, but Jeff Bezos was very strategic in how he bootstrapped, how for 7 years he wrote to the shareholders he was never paying a dividend. They weren't going to get any money back. And he kept putting it back into the business. And he decided to do books, which was a very unsexy industry at the time. But he knew that warehouses were cheaper than having storefronts. And he totally blew out that whole market. And so I think the way you're thinking about it is great, is that just stick to how you believe and your values, because that's going to be important. That's going to become your DNA. And the people that you're building right now, the fan base, which is your tribe, doesn't have to be a huge amount of people. But if they're like really engaged, then it's super important. I remember that someone told me a story about, I think Velvet Underground, when they released the first record, they were like, they didn't really sell that many copies, but everyone who bought a copy wanted to start a band. You know, even if you got 50 or 500 people, that's better than having mass that are a little bit more fickle.
Great comments. And maybe that should be your goal, is that everybody who hears the podcast wants a cat or at least another cat, right?
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned that because we focus a lot of time on rescue and having people ask their everyday questions too. And it sounds like nobody's walking around asking these questions, but we have a way of talking to people and creating a comfortable environment that before we know it, someone's like, oh yeah, I do have this issue. Maybe someone can help me with this. And then they connect over that, like, oh, my cat does that too. I thought that was just like a cat thing. And you know, people feel more comfortable talking about things that they love about.
And I think one thing I'd eventually like to do with it is to have some in-person meetings for people, because we're trying to build a community, I think, more than anything else.
And it's funny because it's finding that balance of like, okay, I am a quirky person, I'm creative and it's fun. There's more to me than cats, but give me an outlet that I can connect over them and talk about them freely without people saying, oh, I'm a dog person. You know, it's kind of funny how people go that way.
I mean, if you can figure out how to monetize that community aspect, that's where the money is, right? Cat people, dog people, all animal people can be obsessive, but we utilize community quite a bit in our branding and messaging. And I got to look at it because I remembered this fully, but community is single best way to navigate rapid change, build new practices, pursue results and transformation. So if you can create that community environment where all of your members become raving fans, marketing and everything that you love becomes a lot easier, but that's cool.
I constantly text cat pictures to my kids, but since Danielle and I started this, Danielle and I are texting cat pictures all the time.
Why she needs a bigger file.
And that's one of the questions we actually ask people. We ask them, if you look at your phone right now, especially if you're on an iPhone, you can search for certain words and it categorizes them. And we say, if you look for the word cat in your phone, how many do you have? And then you can tell who our loyal listeners are, because I'll just get a random text message from somebody, or someone will message us on Facebook or Instagram. We'll talk about things. And the other day we were talking about the song that was from a movie. We couldn't figure out what it was. 6 days later, because you know the show was recorded a week earlier, I'm getting an answer of Lady and the Tramp. And I was like, did you text the right person? They're like, that's the answer to the question on your show. And I was like, oh, wow, they're listening. This is awesome.
Yeah. So we feel like it can be really interactive, but we also feel like a lot of people don't want to hear us talking about cats.
Yeah. And what's so we keep them short? I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things I wanted to share again with the format. I've had some people say, you know, it has to be an hour, it has to be interview style, you have to have 13 commercials or 2.5 commercials is a secret number. I think if it's not fun for you, then I think you can't sustain it and monetize it more.
Yeah.
For us, we're finding that number between like 25 and 35 minutes is good. It's like just enough. Because then honestly, at the end of the day, I'm like, all right, I'm done talking about cats. Can we talk about something else now?
Well, that's kind of funny because Elizabeth never really seems to lose interest in talking about it.
Yeah, she's a little bit more hardcore than I am, I think.
Well, I like to say I was born with a cat in my arms. That's my whole life. So it's the Jersey Podcats. And then Danielle, you're very active on social media too, Danielle Woolley. We will be right back. We're not done yet. If you missed any of this, listen to it on our podcast tomorrow for Passage to Profit Show, Road to Entrepreneurship with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart. Our guest today, Ken Paskins, and we will be right back.
I'm Richard Gearhart of Gearhart Law. We specialize in patents, trademarks, and copyrights. We love working with entrepreneurs, and here is our client, Anya, to tell you what it's like working with us. Anya?
Hi, I'm Anya, the founder of Happy Bond, and we've been with Gearhart Law for about 6 years. They've followed our whole patent and trademark journey, and we're extremely happy that we had them at our side, especially because our product is a pet collagen that has now 2 patents, thanks to them, for the joint of the pets and a new dog food that is extremely new and has a process that is protected through their help. We really have to thank them for guiding us through the whole process and as a startup made it possible for us to do that.
Thank you, Anya. So to learn more about patents, go to learnmoreaboutpatents.com and download our free entrepreneur's guide to patents. That's learnmoreaboutpatents.com.
It's Passage to Profit.
Alicia Morrissey is our programming director at Passage to Profit, and she's also a fantastic jazz vocalist. You can scroll to the bottom of the PassageToProfitShow.com website and check out her album.
But now it's time for the question. Elizabeth, you have a question for our guest, so
I do.
Put it out there.
I'm going to ask Ken Paskins first, theshiftspot.com. So Ken, what inspires you every day?
It's my family. I'm getting up every day and working for my family, and probably honestly just coming off Father's Day, and my 3 daughters fixed me a beautiful breakfast. Started with an omelet, turned into scrambled eggs though.
Well, as long as you like both.
Either or. I asked for an omelet, turned into scrambled eggs. I knew that I probably shouldn't have asked for the omelet, but I tried.
But you guys probably had a lot of fun watching the whole thing.
Yeah, the youngest was scraping it off, and it was good.
Yeah, I have to agree that family's always a good answer.
Yeah.
Cliff Beach with cliffbeachmusic.com and your book Side Hustle, Flow Principles Productive on Amazon.
You know, I'm thankful and inspired as an artist and business person that we live in a world where we can get paid for our ideas. I still find that to be very novel. And I feel like that the process of being able to pull an idea from your head out to make it tangible to the world where other people can access it is just an amazing thing. And so I'm just humbled and inspired by the human experience, the artistic journey. But really, I think we all have our own hero's journey, you know, a beginning, middle, and end, cradle to grave, as I heard mentioned earlier. And so I'm just inspired that you can pull that childlike wonderment forward into life where you can continue to ask interesting questions and be curious about the world. And I think people that do that end up having more interesting and exciting lives.
Excellent. Yes. Danielle Woolley, thejerseypodcats.com, but also very successful businesswoman. What inspires you every day?
For me, it's being more myself and being able to aim to be the person that I wish I had when I was younger, especially because I've always been kind of quirky and creative, but I've also been very business oriented early on. Like I was obsessed with customer service. One of my first jobs, people are like, you mean the counter where people go to yell at you for stuff that's wrong? Like I just love learning how everything worked and how to make it better. And I kind of held myself back a little bit back then because nobody was really doing those things or saying the things that I now say and do. So what inspires me is trying to be myself so that others feel like it's okay for them to be themselves too.
Excellent. Richard Gearhart, owner of Gearhart Law, patents, trademarks, copyrights.
Inspiration comes from a lot of sources for me. I like a good pizza and I adore my family. Elizabeth and my kids are constant sources of inspiration.
And the cats.
To a lesser extent. And then I would say probably the entrepreneurial journey I am on with Gearhart Law. You know, every day is different. Every day is a mixed day. You know, every day has its highs and its lows, but I feel like I'm growing all the time. and working hard to meet the challenges. So I think for me, the pleasure is in the journey. And people say that, but that's really where I'm at.
Well, what inspires me, as I said, I have a video directory of business owners, and we have this radio show and podcast and the Cat podcast. Other people really inspire me. I love hearing their stories, but I have to agree with Ken as well. My daughter inspires me, my son too, to some degree, but I want to be a role model for my daughter. And I want her to see how successful women can be. So hopefully I'll be successful.
You're already successful and you're already an inspiration to her.
Thank you. So I'm doing exactly what I love right now. So at this point in my life, that's a good thing. So our guest today was Ken Paskins, business transformational expert, co-founder of The Shift Spot, S-H-I-F-T Spot, founder of GCE Strategic Consulting. He has a special offer for anybody listening. Honestly, if I were in the position to take this up, I would if I could. But
yes, members of Passage to Profit cannot apply.
No, but if, he's going to pick two people that get back to him a free gap analysis for their company, which is just an amazing thing to get. And to get that, you go to his website, theshiftspot.com/gap.
Yeah.
And the code is Passage to Profit. So honestly, if you have a business and you're listening to this and you want to get some expert advice, I would definitely put my name in the hat for this. So he's going to pick two people. And then we had Cliff Beach. And honestly, I don't think we've ever had anybody on the show before who's been on American Idol. I'm like so impressed. But Cliff has been in the music world a long time and he's done a lot of amazing things. And you can find out more about him at cliffbeachmusic.com. And then his book is called
Side Hustle Flow Principles.
Thank you. And that is available on Amazon. And you can find his music videos on YouTube. And then we had my co-host for Jersey Podcasts, Danielle Woolley. And you can get a hold of us at the Jersey Podcasts. Go to the website, jerseypodcasts.com. Danielle is just like a fountain of knowledge. She's also a professional services consultant, and she's a liaison for a rescue group, Tommy's Cats Rescue.
Cats are the name of the game.
We love our cats.
So before we go, I'd like to thank the Passage to Profit team, Noah Fleischman, our producer, Alicia Morrissey, our program director. Our podcast can be found tomorrow anywhere you find your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.